everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
This is a run through. I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mal. And this is our Shark Week Day 5. Choma, I'm so excited that we get to revisit your amazing interview with Raul Lopez, the designer of beloved brand Luar. You went to his design studio in, is it Industry City in Brooklyn last winter? And I mean, I love your origin story. Tell us how you and Raul met.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, he was a baby. He was still a teenager. And I remember at the time, he was one half of Hood by Air with Shane Oliver. And I remember taking a photograph of them both on the Lower East Side because I was blogging about. Ah. And yeah, he had the spark back then. You know, they were making T-shirts and it was super
lo-fi. He must have been a baby.
Yeah, he was maybe 19, 18.
Wow.
But, you know, fast forward to 2017 and he founded his own brand, and he's, you know, had a, his bags have been a runaway hit. I think I see those bags everywhere.
They have become a real hero product, if you will.
Yes, and the Anna bag, which is the it bag that we're seeing everywhere, was named after his mother, and it kind of represents all of the women in his family.
Not our mother.
No. And this year he will be closing New York Fashion Week for the second time.
That's exciting.
So, yeah, we went to his studio earlier this year and, yeah, it was great to talk to him about fashion because he, just to hear him talk about how his brand has evolved, just how far he's come was great. And he was going into doing the, I think it was like a couple of days before the announcement that he was part of the LVMH prize finalists. Like he was one of the chosen finalists. So
The chosen ones.
So, you know, he's had a big year. He's had a big year, and we got to snoop around in his studio, which was fun.
Oh, so
out
excited.
In Brooklyn, yeah.
Hi, I'm Raul Lopez, and I have a brand named Luar.
And tell us a bit about the name. I actually didn't put two and two together for a long time. It was basically your name backwards.
It is my name backwards. Yeah. I mean, it all really stemmed from creating this alter ego. It was actually my AOL name. It was a way of like kind of hiding myself and not letting people know who I really was because I was obviously gay and I didn't want no one to know and blah, blah, blah. Like being in the chat rooms, but it was still me. And I always say like Luar is just a reflection of myself. So it's funny because I used it in the beginning when I started designing my own label. It was Luar Zippeau. I was like, I just want to fool everybody in the industry and make them think I'm like a French boy. Like, you know.
It does like sound like a French
boy. Yeah, I was like, it sounds kind of French. Luar Zippeau, you know. And like, it was a way of like, okay, this is how I can like clickbait. They won't know it's like this Dominican boy from Brooklyn. Even though they already knew me, but it was a way to like, again, use the alter ego to like reel people in.
You're one of the few New York designers who actually was born in New York. And tell me what it was like growing up in Brooklyn. I mean, you grew up in Williamsburg.
I'm born and raised in Williamsburg.
Wow.
Which was called Los Sures, which is the south side of Williamsburg. I mean, it was definitely a diamond in the rough. It was not a good era to be living in Brooklyn. It was probably top 5 or 10 in the 80s and 90s, deemed one of the worst places to live in.
Wow.
And had the biggest poverty rate. Mm. But to me, it was beautiful. I loved everything about it. We were getting robbed every month, probably. I remember coming home and no TV. Everything is gone. like just the sofas. And my dad was the super of the building, so they hated us. It was like,
no.
They would spray can our like door. I mean, this is like the graffiti era, and it was like floor to ceiling graffiti in the building. It was just like crazy. It looked like an art. Now it would be like an art installation, but we would get home and it would be like F the super, and like oh, I had the kryptonite for his wife. Woo! Like it was like crazy, but even though it was this like really crazy urban dystopia, I mean, that's all I knew. So to me, it was really amazing and it was beautiful. And a lot of my inspiration comes from that era. I feel like it built the skin that I have now and the person I am. And I'm very grateful for everything that I saw growing up in this like shitty dump. I always sit back and think about it. I mean, I was in the Uber coming over here and I got really emotional because I was just looking out the window, and not to sound like cliche, and I was like, damn, it's so crazy. Like, I'm still in the same apartment I grew up in, you know? Wow. And to me, it's like, all this can come, and I've lived a life of like any kid would wish to live, you know? Yeah. And I've been privileged. I scraped myself to the top and I've hustled and bustled. So, and like going to the bathroom right now, I was upstairs and, sorry, I'm getting a little emotional, but like the guy who was like in the bathroom, cleaned the windows, he was just like, you make me so proud. Like, I'm Dominican and I see how hard you work in your office. He's like, I didn't know you were Dominican. He's like, thank you so much for doing this for us. And I was like, thank you. And I was walking down here and I had to tell him, I was like, I need to take like a moment. But I think that's like my mission is just, we could all do it in this like space.
Yeah. I mean, the energy at your shows and having seen how hard you worked and how you really lead from your heart and your soul. And
yeah.
So much of your work, you feel the person who you are.
Yeah.
And there's something really pure and beautiful about that. I recently went to the Harvey Milk School to talk to some of the kids with a friend of yours, James Garland.
And oh my God.
Yeah. And I think you went to that school, right?
So actually, I used to sneak into the school.
Okay.
So James and Shane and me co-founded HBA. Mm-hmm. And James was part of the clique as well. And right. Also designed like the accessories. And, you know, he was part of the team. It was just like us three, mm-hmm. You know? But it was just so funny because I used to go there because Shane would use the Photoshop class and we would use it to make the HBA t-shirts.
Right. Wow.
Illustrator was so expensive.
Amazing.
So it was like, we were going there and then we were like, get the PDF and then take it to like, I think it was like on Varick Street and get the screens burnt. And then we were so screened in my house on the floor.
Wow.
Humble beginnings.
It's so cool. I mean, I think we should explain a little bit about like what makes that school particularly special. Obviously, it's like designed specifically for
queer children.
Yeah, for queer children.
It's just for queer children. And I think it was a good moment in my life because I was going to a straight high school.
Right.
And I met Shane on Christopher Street, which was like the safe haven for like all the queer kids and that, especially for the POC kids. Because we couldn't be who we really wanted to be. Like, I used to pack my clothing in my backpack, get changed on the train platform when I would get off on, like, West 4. And there was no M train. So it was, like, from the J. You had to, and this is at night. So I was, like, sneaking out at, like, 10 p.m. and then going to, like, Christopher Street. And so I would take the J to the F and then get off on West 4th and then walk all the way to the end because it was this like round mirror at the end of the platform, which is like, I mean, there wasn't cameras, so they had these mirrors. And I used to go to Milk was because on Fridays they would have after school was like voguing. This is where like the mini balls started, and Shane was nasty at voguing. Like, it was so good. But it was funny because I used to have really long hair. So, like, my thing was, like, always throwing shade with my hair. And, like, and that's how kind of, like, even before we were cool, like, there was this spot in Harlem called the Karate Club. And it was called the Clubhouse. And Clubhouse is where we all used to go. And that's where they would have, like, the mini balls every Thursday. I would go from Brooklyn to Harlem and leave there at, like, 5 a.m. to go to school.
Because those balls always start late, right? They don't get going until. So like, it was what like, is the average start time?
So you would go and the beats, they'll just have like voguing beats. It was like and you'll just be going crazy for like 3 hours. Wow. And then it'll be like, let's say like from like 10 to like 1 a.m. and then the ball will start. But for those 3 hours, you're just going crazy.
What was the atmosphere like? What was it like for you as like a teenager to be in those spaces?
Good. It was just like a really difficult era to, you know, be flamboyant and dress the way we did. I mean, we stood out even in the balls. We stood out in Christopher Street. We stood out in the hood. We stood out everywhere we went. We always stood out. And I think like it was a safe haven for all of us. Like a lot of these kids were being displaced. They were being kicked out of homes. I had the luxury and the privilege to not be kicked out, but I still couldn't be myself.
The run-through will be back in just a moment. Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult, to how to create a workout routine that works for you, to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
I'm sort of curious, you know, I feel like you probably came out of the womb with style. Like, when did you know you wanted to design?
I always loved it. My dad was a super, so he was trying to get me to do like custodial work or like construction or something. And I'm like, no, I just wanted to be by my mom by the sewing machine. If you see like all my looks when I was a kid.
I've heard about them.
My mom would have to like put me in a suit and tie to go to school. I wouldn't go. And they used to call me Chalinita, which means little tie, because I always had to have a tie on. It's so funny. I'm like, still the same girl. Look at this picture. I have it always on my phone.
Oh, you'll have to describe it to us.
Chain, the fade, the hair design. It's like the t-shirt. I'm like, I'm the same person. Like, it's the same person.
Literally the same.
But I always knew. I always wanted to be a designer since I was a kid. I also was a way of escaping and kind of becoming this chameleon to fit into all the circles in school. Mm. So I was like kind of like designing things that, you know, could appease like the hood kids, like the goth kids, like the nerd. So it was like I would have like the Timberland on with like a pair of like really weird jeans that I probably like chopped up and like, I don't know, took the sleeves off, put it on my t-shirt and like safety. It was just, that was so crazy. It was just like, I made so much stuff out of duct tape. It was crazy. Like Home Depot probably made so much money off of me growing up. Cause it was like, if you ask like people that went to like junior high school with me, they were like, oh my God. They used to ask me if I could design something for them and they would pay me with the duct tape. Because I would go so crazy with this duct tape. It was like Valentine's was coming. It was like red tape and like white tape and like black. It was like, and then I had the thrift store Domsies that was like 2 blocks from me. So I would just go buy leather, chop it up, do like the whole thing. It was, I mean, kind of stole my DNA. Yeah. I'm still the same girl.
Yeah, it's
love a hybrid.
So cool. Yeah, no, and I love how your aesthetic sort of speaks to that too, you know? And obviously you had knowledge, you know, you'd already been part of a fashion brand. Like, what was it like? What was the kind of emotion going into doing your first thing solo? Because like, obviously you knew you'd had a history of doing fashion, but like, there's something different about striking out on your own and it being
I mean, obviously it's different when you don't have a shoulder to lean on or someone to like ask, or I was completely by myself.
Yeah.
And Shayna's a genius.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're still like close friends, like just still my sister, you know, and credit is due when it's due. And she is one of the best designers that have existed in our era.
For sure.
Like, it's in, like, period.
Yeah.
But I think that was our story, and I wanted to say my own story. And when I decided to do it, it was difficult. It was hard. I was alone, and it's a hard thing to start again from scratch.
I bet.
We scratched to get to
you
the top.
You built a brand.
I wanted to create something that people can also exist, be and fit in, and if you don't fit in, and make clothing that make people feel comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah, I mean, and then you went from that to like having a best-selling it bag. I mean, you did what a lot of designers really, what is so difficult to do. Like, tell us about like what the process was of designing that first bag, and obviously being an accessories girl yourself, knowing accessories. Like, what
I think, I mean, I'm an accessory girl. Like, that's my thing. But it took me a long time to like figure out the perfect silhouette that also I wanted to pay homage to my grandmother and my mom, but I didn't know how to like conceptualize it yet. They hustled and bustled in these factories in New York. I wanted to like kind of represent the mod era of like fashion with the handle, which is more like my grandmother's era. Mm. And then the briefcase-esque shape of the body, which is more like an 80s, 90s, you know, nod to my mom at home. That I remember making a briefcase out of like neoprene. And I put like, I remember cutting off backpack straps and like literally hand stitching it. And I covered my dad's briefcase in the neoprene, and he's looking for it, and it was in my closet. And I had took it and like wrapped it in like black neoprene and like put straps on it. And I think the bag is really special. I wanted people to take a piece of me and my heritage, and also like paying homage to immigrants that came here. I like to share stories through my pieces.
Tell me about the name of the bag.
So the bag is called Anna. It's named after my mom, both my grandmothers, my sister, and X, Y, and Z. They're all Annas. That's why I named it Annas, because of them. All the female figures in my family that really molded me into who I am. Mm-hmm. And my mom is my biggest supporter since I was a kid. And I remember her like being like, no, I want to take you to therapy. But it wasn't because she was trying to convert me. Right. She wanted me to come out.
Right.
And she she saw me so miserable.
Right.
And she was just really trying to help me free myself. Mm. And she was like, if you can't tell me, maybe you'll tell somebody else that's not in the family. And like, you know, you can finally like just let it out and say it. Like, just say it. When I came out to my mom, she was like, oh, the only one who didn't know was you, you know? And I'm crying. It's like 3 a.m. And I come home and I'm like crying on the couch, and she comes on. She's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I'm bisexual. Because I couldn't say, I didn't want to say I was gay. And, you know, I was like, I still like girls. But she was like, oh, sweetie, you know, it's okay. She was like, the only one who didn't know was you. And I was like, that wasn't the outcome I wanted. I wanted you to cry. And like, she was just laughing. It was kind of crazy because I was so scared my whole life.
Yeah. Countdown to Fashion Week. You are closing Fashion Week, which is a huge deal. How are you feeling right now?
I feel crazy. Good crazy though. But a lot of things, like I'm a bit angsty, just nervous, you know. I just want to make everybody proud, and not saying like I'm not going to shut it down, because I am.
Yeah, I'm excited to know what you have in store.
I mean, I think
this is no pressure. No pressure.
I mean, it's always pressure, even without the pressure.
That's it for this episode. Tomorrow on the show, our New York Fashion Week coverage continues with a recap of the shows with Vogue's fashion director, Virginia Smith, and a special episode with model, activist, and all-around spectacular woman, Beth Ann Hardison. Also, get ready for Vogue World on September 14th, happening in London. It's a multi-act celebration of the British performing arts. And you can watch the live stream on Vogue.com on September 14th, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. London Time.
The Run Through of Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then, I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.